regardless of what's holding you back, the important thing is just to take that first step. And from there, it becomes very natural, because if you're listening to your organization, they will tell you the answers to your questions.
This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with my friend Keisha Carroll. Keisha is a communication strategist who partners with organizations doing meaningful work, and her company, KC Roberg, helps small and mid-sized businesses and nonprofits elevate their brands and achieve their business goals. I invited Keisha to the show today because she's helped many organizations explore the right way to integrate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs into their organizations. I know a lot of companies and organizations struggle to do it right, so I thought a conversation with Keisha might help. Welcome to the show, Keisha.
Thank you. Always good to talk with you.
Same with you. I'm glad you're here today. Keisha, let's start by telling my listeners a little bit more about your background. What's your story up to this point?
Well, it's a nice, long, wonderful story, but I tend to think about it in the context of two chapters. I began in the corporate world, where I worked in senior level marketing and communications positions, mostly at big companies, some startups, and one fast-paced agency, where I built and ran initiatives that really drove their businesses and their brands forward. During this first chapter, this is where I did things where I helped companies grow into new markets, release new products, sometimes building their reputations and launching cool campaigns. It was a really exciting time in my career. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Then about 15 years ago, my priorities started to change. I wanted to be more intentional with the work that I did. I wanted for the work that I did to have impact. So I made a conscious shift to working with companies and nonprofits that do meaningful work. It was during this chapter, which is my current chapter, that I began working exclusively with brands looking to make a difference in the world. And that meant expanding beyond the marketing communications that I had been doing to include coaching and strategic initiatives like diversity, equity, inclusion, corporate social responsibility, and philanthropy, all of those which are very closely tied to brand.
Sure. Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about is about how diversity, equity, inclusion became one of your priorities. But I want to also talk about why those programs can really feel kind of monumental to organizations. So a lot of them struggle to implement it. And sometimes when they do implement it, they struggle to get it right. Why does that happen? Why is it so hard for them to even know sometimes where to start?
Well, I think I like to look at this in two different ways, because I think there's companies that it comes naturally for and some that don't. And I think it's helpful to step back and look at both. So I think about many years ago when I worked at my last company in-house before I started working as a consultant. I worked with a law firm, and they were noticing over time that a lot of their female partners were not coming back to work after they had children. And for them, that was a problem. It wasn't because somebody said you had to have a nice balance of men and women. It was because that is not the kind of law firm they wanted to have. They wanted a law firm that represented the community that they served. So they set out to put together an initiative to make that change, and they were very successful at it. So that sort of DEI program comes very naturally. It's a part of their brand, a part of their business. It was meaningful. Where I think brands and organizations struggle today is because of everything that has happened in the last couple of years, right? Relative to racial tensions. And I think small and medium companies especially struggle with this because they were unprepared. They maybe cared about this topic, but they hadn't put a lot of thought into it. And suddenly the world changed and they had to have a statement. They had to have a position. They had to calm the concerns of their employees. And I think they realized that or felt that the risks to making a misstep. So they didn't want to do something wrong. And oftentimes that fear is the biggest thing to keeping organizations from getting started. I think other times they don't have the time or resources to do it properly. So they're almost in quicksand and don't know how to get started. And I think it's important to tell people that regardless of what's holding you back, the important thing is just to take that first step. And from there, it becomes very natural, because if you're listening to your organization, they will tell you the answers to your questions.
Is that kind of one of the first steps, is to make sure that you're doing the listening that is critical, that I always say is critical to do, but I'm hearing it from you too, which I love.
Yeah, I think when you think about any strategic planning process, and I consider diversity, equity, inclusion planning a strategic process, you want to step back and assess and ask questions and learn before moving forward. That's very much a first step. The other first step is really to make sure that the leadership is involved, bought in, and driving this, because without those two things in place, the rest of everything else you do won't be successful.
And it's interesting that a lot of people think a DE, a diversity, equity, inclusion, or DE&I program is just all about your hiring practices. But I know from talking to you in past conversations and from other folks that I know are in the field that it's much bigger than that. So what are some of the things that people who either are maybe may need you and be struggling to take that first step, or maybe they've taken some steps and maybe they're doing pretty well, but what are the things that you see that are really critical for organizations to look out for or to do to make sure that their programs really matter and are really doing what they're meant to do, rather than just be something to do because that's what they think they should be doing?
Yes, and certainly the hiring part is important for DEI. That's oftentimes where organizations start. So like I said, that's a good place to start. Attracting and retaining diverse talent is critical to a business being able to achieve its objectives. I do play a role in helping with that. That would be an example of a strategic initiative that I could help with, because sometimes they need the resources to think about, step back and think about how to do that. I also work a lot with leadership and culture, because those two areas are important. And many companies have a culture, they just haven't articulated it, and they need to make sure that diversity inclusion is a part of their culture. If it isn't authentically meaningful and a part of their culture, then it's going to be difficult. I think it also is, we talk about the concepts of being competitive. If you want to be able to, again, retain people, not necessarily attract people, but even retain people, you have to be creating an inclusive environment. And then lastly, I think it's important for companies, I work with them, to think about the communities that they serve. Back to the law firm example, I had a little bit of a challenging time at one point with them, because as law firms tend to be, there's a lot of older white gentlemen at the top, or at least in the olden days, that was the case. And they would say to me, I'm going to go into this new business pitch. I don't need to bring anybody else because I've been doing this for 20 years and I know what I'm doing. Well, what they didn't realize is they were going to pitch a startup company where there was maybe a young man or young woman at the helm, and therefore they weren't reflective of the marketplace that they were serving. So just getting in and understanding and assessing those kinds of opportunities are ways that I can help, or even others in the organization can help, just by asking those questions.
Yeah, sure. And that's so important, because after all, we're all human beings at work, aren't we? Isn't it really about people? Successful businesses are really about the people doing the work. And it's just so funny to me that there are so many organizations, even in the era that we're in right now, that don't put enough effort into it. And I guess maybe it is a top-down thing from the leadership. You mentioned leadership buy-in. I can imagine that's critically important for you to have in order for you to even make a dent for folks when they're trying to implement a program.
It's interesting, because it is often influenced by the bottom, especially if it's one of these organizations that's having a hard time to get started. They're the ones that are saying, we need to be doing this because this is important to me. Younger generations tend to be more aware and interested in concepts of diversity, equity, inclusion. But it is absolutely critical to have the leadership component. So I say those two need to come together. And when they meet in the middle, that is where you have something really beautiful and really special, because then everybody is on the same page. And that is culture.
Right.
That is the culture, the purpose of what you do.
I could see that being a real winning moment when that moment does happen and folks are aligned like that and everybody's on the same page. You know me, I do a lot of communication coaching and training, and a lot of it is really getting people to that point as well, to really get aligned and understand each other. And I'm big on inclusion as well in the work that I do, because very often the way we communicate or the way we operate just doesn't include the wonderful it's not inclusive enough of the wonderful differences that we all have. And a lot of times we find tension in that rather than seeing it as an opportunity to have all these really, really terrific perspectives, but we just don't often talk about how to manage them or how to recognize our differences and to leverage them rather than let them be barriers. So I don't know if you have those kind of issues in the work that you do where, there is that kind of friction that you have to overcome.
I think, I don't know if it's friction or I might think of it as opportunities. Again, you raise those in the process of talking with people. So for example, a company that I worked with that was fairly large company, sophisticated staff, active HR department, thought they kind of knew exactly what everybody was thinking. They were a little bit on a forward-thinking path as far as employee resource groups or mm-hmm. affinity groups. These are groups that oftentimes companies put together to create opportunities for different dimensions of diversity to meet and raise awareness and support each other. Well, it turns out this was a tech company and several of their employees worked remotely. This was before the pandemic and a lot of people were working remotely, but they had never talked to some of their remote employees about how to make them feel engaged in the process of affinity groups. They would get together in a boardroom and have some sort of event. And if you've ever been on the other side of one of those where you're just listening and everybody else is having fun in another place. So mm-hmm. that was just one of the aha moments that we had that really made a big difference to help people that are working remotely feel included and that they could contribute and that they were just as special and accepted as the others that were in the bricks and mortar office. Those kind of learnings will help them in this environment now, certainly.
Yeah, and I can see the value of having someone external like you come in and become a partner and become ingrained, but be able to shed light on those missed opportunities that you just don't get if you're continuing with business as usual. They may have never had that insight if they hadn't started to do the work to have you involved to get them there, to shine a light on those things.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think the nice thing is that when you take the time to listen, like in this case, the company supported me in talking with a wide range of employees, then it was also important for them to go back to the employees and let them know what they had heard. What did we hear and what are we going to do to change? And that's an important part of the process as well. So being transparent about maybe where they're strong and where there's opportunities for growth, then actually doing the work and then celebrating the work and then going back and taking a moment to check back in again. Is it working? Do we need to adjust? And I think that's an important step. It's not just listening and saying, okay, now we're going to launch all these D&I programs and everything's perfect. It's making sure that you are honest with the successes and failures and that you continue to grow.
That's so important, Keisha, what you just said for almost for everyone. But a lot of times I think in this age of, you know, of sparkly clean social media profiles, and a lot of times we think that when you bring in a consultant or you bring in a partner, they're going to give you the solution to the problem and then that's going to be it. You know, wipe your hands clean, everything's great, done, perfect. That's not the way it is. That checking in, seeing what worked, what didn't work, being honest about what worked and what didn't, and realizing that everybody has the positive intent to make all this work and you are going to need adjustment. It happens to me a lot when I do presentation coaching with folks too, because they expect having me involved is going to make that first draft perfect. No way. We're on a long road together when you bring me in to get there. Will we get there and will you feel great by the end that the work we did together is going to make this presentation or whatever the initiative positive and you're going to look good? Absolutely. But that's not happening in week two.
You are so right. This is going to be an ongoing journey.
Right. Good. And it is a journey. It is a journey. And speaking of the journey that we're all on right now with coming, you know, hopefully to the close of the global pandemic that we've been through and what we're seeing in the workforce with the Great Resignation, I would think that what you do is even more important now, because if we want to retain top performers, I think that more and more organizations need to be investing more time into this element, this aspect of inclusion and diversity and equity.
You're so right. And, you know, employees, I know from the work that I do in DEI as well as corporate social responsibility, that the people want to work for employers that share their same values mm-hmm. and that have created a safe place for them to come to work as they are and to contribute what they have to contribute. And the companies that do that well will retain the talent. Again, that ties back to purpose and culture. Mm-hmm. So if you're being consistent with those values, it will have a huge impact on your bottom line. You know, we all know that it's more expensive to cost more to hire someone than it does to retain someone. So the time that you mm-hmm. put in, invest in retaining your talent will have a return on investment.
Yeah. And you said something to me right there that really struck me. And I was speaking to another friend a couple of weeks ago on my show. We were talking about burnout and mental health at work. And you said the statement, people should be able to come to work as they are, as you are. And it's funny to think that a lot of people really can't do that. And that's a sad thing to think about, but it's very, very true. And I even know that in parts of my life, I haven't been able to bring the whole real, true Michael to work.
I probably experienced that as well, but I think I don't know what other people's situations are. So you just have to be open to whatever that might be. And I think we saw that again at the pandemic, where people were suddenly on camera in their homes. Yeah. And there was this sensitivity, you know, you might be a different person at work than you are at home. And then by the end, it was CEOs coming in their sweatpants and,
right,
you know,
yeah.
This is who we are. So I think that that's been a brilliant change. And I think that will continue. I've seen it too, with a younger generation, and sort of, even if it's just a acceptance of how people wear their hair, how they, you know, with tattoos for a while, there was a bias that tattoos meant something. That's not always the case. You know, there's just all sorts of different biases that have gone out the window here, where if you're good at what you do, you're good at what you do.
Yeah. And it's funny. I worked with a gentleman, this is probably 20 years ago, who he had, I noticed he had long sleeves on, but, and when his sleeves went up, he had like these cuffs on his wrists, like cuffs. And I said, I would ask anybody anything. I was mm-hmm. a little nosy probably, but I said, oh, what are those? Or those are like kind of cool, like leather bracelets and everything. He's like, oh, actually, no, that's just covering like all my tattoos, because I've been, at work, I've had issues with keeping jobs because of when people find out about that. And I thought to myself, what?
Yeah, that just makes me sad. That makes me sad to hear those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I think, I really believe, I'm a glass half full person, and I really believe the majority of people and companies want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They just need to take the time to think about it. Even leaders that I work with who are very supportive of diversity, equity, inclusion, they have a lot of other things that they're doing in running a business. And mm-hmm. many times they just haven't stopped to really think about this. And that's, you know, if they do that, then everything else comes naturally. So I, even though those kinds of stories make me sad, I see all sorts of potential for change at a small level and at big level. So
what kind of questions do you get around DE&I when you're, you know, talking to folks that either don't know what to do or maybe may not be sure if they're doing it right? What kind of questions do you hear from folks?
Well, I, of course, how do you get started? And that's a big question. And I gave you a few ideas, but there's a lot more steps to it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a couple of years ago, one of the biggest questions I got was, can you help me write my diversity, equity, and inclusion statement? Mm. Which I would say no,
right,
because I can't write your diversity, equity, inclusion statement. You know, everybody's trying to frantically get something up on the website. Mm-hmm. And just because it's up on the website doesn't mean it will will result in any action. So I would actually say, I told people not to put a diversity inclusion statement on their website until they had a conversation about what they wanted to commit to, because mm-hmm. there's more harm in doing that, because then it just looks like it's something for marketing purposes and not something that's very authentic.
And your employees see through that like crazy when you do things like that.
They do. Your employees and your external constituents yeah. do. And when they start to all read the same, that's a problem. Yeah. So it's in that case, less is more. Mm-hmm. And I think doing the actual work and talking about the work you're doing is much more effective. I also heard, even though I don't have an HR background, a lot of people would say to me, I'm struggling with hiring people. I want to do diversity inclusion with air quotes, but I haven't been able to find anybody with different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure what to do. And I would say, have you tried hard enough? Because mm-hmm. there's people out there that are different than the people that you tend to hire on a regular basis. You just need to spend the time to find them. You might need to go about your recruiting differently. You might need to put together mentoring programs for young leaders. You might have to partner with organizations that attract a different kind of employee. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things you need to take the time to do, or nothing will change. Other than that, I think I get questions a little bit about inclusive terminology, you know, what kind mm-hmm. of words are good word choices. And, you know, I think when I hear those questions, really, that's just sometimes eliminating the word man and putting in a general term. So like mankind, you might hear people say humankind, mm-hmm. or manpower, you might hear workforce, or just things like that, where you have to stop and think about it. I'm guilty of saying the word guys. I'll say, hey guys.
Me too. I try so hard.
Yes. And you have to just step back and say friends or all, you know, just it's a learning process for us all.
I hear it come out of my mouth and I get so mad at myself, and I have gotten better, but it's just a long habit that I've had that I think a lot of us, you've even said you use it too. So
yes.
it makes
yes.
me feel a little better, but I still want to yes. stop doing that, because that's not an inclusive way to address mm-hmm. a group in a Zoom room that there's, you know, 3/4 of them are women. Mm-hmm. I also noticed, I was watching HGTV this week, and I noticed they're not calling the master bedroom the master bedroom anymore. It's called the owner's suite.
Ah, that's, yep.
Which I thought was an interesting change as well. So, and those little tweaks, they're not hard for us all to do if we try.
And you know the way to do that, and I would imagine the powers that be that started with that change probably listened to people to hear that. So they probably, if they did their jobs right, a builder might say, what do you think about these terms? Are any of these terms uncomfortable to you? What terms would you use? You know, things like that. And then when you ask those questions, you get the right answer, you know, you get answers from people. And as a communicator, I'm often in a position to remind organizations to invite diverse groups to review communications materials, to help mm-hmm. when you're setting up campaigns or programs, because you need to have those voices at the table in order for your communications to be effective. Again, I could write an awesome news release or an awesome website copy, and if I'm only talking to a certain group of people who is reviewing it, I have limited feedback.
Sure, definitely. Keisha, we've talked about a lot today so far, and I want to get back to the steps for getting started, because that's one thing that I hear a lot from the people that I talk to in my day-to-day. You and I have talked about the importance of alignment with leadership and buy-in, also the importance of listening. What else can people do out there who are listening, who may be looking for ways to get started or to get moving on a program that's going to have impact?
Well, I would say, just to go a little deeper on listening, it's really important to create a robust employee feedback system. So some organizations already have that in place and can just plug in, but you want to make sure that you're getting that information so you give employees and managers an opportunity to voice their opinions. Mm-hmm. Once you have all that information, A next step would be to look at various trainings or programs that would start to bring this to life. And some organizations will do diversity training. They'll do unconscious bias training. That's oftentimes a sort of a baseline program. Mm-hmm. Many will introduce a mentorship program to help new employees feel included in the organization, or all employees feel included. The least fun step that happens is the looking at policies and procedures. But I think that's one of the things that companies absolutely need to do, because you need to have systemic alignment with all of this. If you say what you say you're going to do, you have to have the procedures in place to make that happen. Then I would look at a step where I call this creating a sense of belonging. So think about, from all that you heard and what you know about your organization, how can you make everyone feel a sense of belonging? It could be through how they work with their teams. It could be some sort of employee groups where people come together with like mind and share and support one another. It could even be acknowledging different holidays or religious events. That's oftentimes a really good place for organizations to start to make people feel included. And then lastly, really looking at identifying diverse talent pools. Even though we talked a lot about this not being just an HR, DEI being just an HR initiative, it's still very important to continue to be thinking about employees, attracting, retaining, and growing diverse talent. That's still very much a part of what we're trying to do here. And then I would say, just lastly, tell those stories as a communicator. Make sure whatever you're doing that you tell those stories, because that's the most authentic way to talk about your commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these tips today. I definitely know that you've helped some of my listeners who may have been either struggling with putting things into place, or maybe they've just thought of some ways that they can be better listeners and foster a sense of belonging within their organizations. Because I know, Keisha, you know, when I felt like I'm with my tribe and I belong, I worked a lot harder for those organizations who made me feel that way than the ones that didn't make me feel that way.
Yes, that's great.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I want to give you a second to tell folks how they can find out more about you and your work.
Oh, thank you. I would appreciate that. They could find me at my website, which is kcroberg.com. So kcroberg.com. And they can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Keisha Carroll, and I'm in Venice, Florida.
Awesome, Keisha. And I'll make sure that I put your website in our show notes. And I encourage anybody who needs help. You do a lot more than DE&I programs, so they should definitely check out your website to see all the things that you can do for them. And Keisha, I really appreciate you spending this time with me today. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You take care.
You too. That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communication Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time. The Leadership Communication Show is brought to you by the Comvia Group, your source for leadership communication and workplace relationships coaching and training. Visit wearecomvia, that's wearecomvia.com, to learn more.